Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take a whole stack of sources, pull out the key insights, and help you get up to speed fast. Today, we're heading on a bit of a sensory journey, actually. We're diving into a key that's, well, it's more than just your average cuppa. It's really an experience. Our focus is Ruhuna tea. You might know it as low-grown black tea from Sri Lanka. Now, maybe you've heard lots about the high-grown teas, you know, from the Misty Mountains.
Right, the famous ones.
Exactly. But Ruhuna, it carves out its own space. It's really distinctive. So our mission here is to sort of uncover what makes it tick, that rich, full-bodied flavor, its history. We want you to quickly get a handle on this unique corner of the tea world. We've gathered insights covering everything from the landscapes, which sound beautiful, to how it's actually made. And what's really fascinating, I think, is how its low altitude, something you might not usually associate with top quality, actually helps create its strong character.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, let's unpack this straight away. What makes Ruhuna different right from the start? What's the landscape like?
Well, that's a great place to start because it really challenges what many people think about tea growing. Unlike those high, misty regions like Nuwara Eliya,
right.
Ruhuna is characterized by these vast coastal plains. They rise quite gently sort of towards the edges of the Sinharaja rainforest in the south. And that's where the low-grown description really comes in. The tea gardens there, they generally don't go above 600 meters, maybe 2,000 feet. So quite low.
Okay, so definitely down on the plains, not way up high.
Yeah.
I always had this idea that higher meant better tea. So this low-grown thing, it's really interesting. How does that warmth at lower altitude actually affect the tea plant itself?
Yeah, that's a really common thought, and it makes sense for some tea types. But here in Ruhuna, the consistently warmer temperatures, all that Sri Lankan sunshine, it actually speeds up the growth of the tea bushes.
Ah.
And this faster growth leads to bigger leaves, more robust leaves. And that's a really key factor in its final character. And it's not just the sun and warmth. The soil there on these alluvial plains, it's incredibly fertile. Think rich sediment deposited by rivers over ages.
Right, nutrient rich.
Exactly. And that richness feeds directly into the tea's full body taste. It's naturally there in the leaf because of the soil. And even within Ruhuna itself, you get these little variations, you know, slight differences in the soil or how much wind it gets, the rain across different little pockets or subregions. And that can add subtle little twists to the flavor, too.
So just to help us picture it, if you're looking at a map of Sri Lanka, where exactly is Ruhuna?
Okay, so it covers the southern part of the island. It stretches up towards the edges of that big Sinharaja rainforest around Dinyaa. And specifically, it includes the real southern districts, Galle and Mataara. You even find tea grown right down at sea level there.
Wow, sea level. Okay, that really anchors it to that unique low-grown environment. So you've got these special, larger leaves, hand-picked. What happens next? How do they transform these leaves into the Ruhuna tea we drink? What's the process?
It's a really meticulous process, a kind of symphony of transformation, you could say. Like all the top Sri Lankan teas, it starts with very careful hand plucking. Skilled workers pick just the top two youngest leaves and the bud. That ensures the best quality right from the start.
The classic two leaves and a bud.
Precisely. Then comes withering. The fresh leaves are spread out, usually on these special mats or troughs, in rooms with good air circulation. The goal is to reduce the moisture content.
Makes them easier to handle.
Exactly. It makes them pliable, ready for the next stage, which is rolling. And withering also kicks off some important enzymatic changes within the leaf. The time varies a bit, depending on the exact character they're aiming for.
So they're withered, pliable. What does the rolling stage do for Ruhuna specifically?
Okay, rolling is crucial. The withered leaves are gently rolled, sometimes twisted. This action breaks down the cell walls inside the leaf.
And that releases the good stuff.
Yes, it releases the essential oils and juices. That's where a lot of the aroma and taste comes from. Now, for Ruhuna teas, the rolling is typically, let's say, moderate. It's a bit of a balancing act. You want to extract enough flavor, but because the leaves are naturally larger, you also want to avoid breaking them up too much. Preserve some of that structure.
Okay, makes sense.
And then after rolling, we get to a really defining step. Oxidation.
Right, oxidation. How does that work for Ruhuna, and why is it so important for its character? I think you mentioned it's slightly different.
Yes. Exactly. So after rolling, the leaves are spread out again, this time in a cool, humid environment. They're left to oxidize for a controlled amount of time. This is where the leaf darkens, develops that characteristic black tea color, and the flavor deepens significantly. But what's really interesting, and kind of a signature for Ruhuna, is that the oxidation period is often slightly shorter compared to some other, maybe bolder, black teas.
Yeah, what does that shorter oxidation do?
Well, it's key to its distinctive brightness, both in the brewed tea's color and some would say in aspects of its flavor. It stops short of developing maybe the heaviest notes you find in some other black teas. And then finally, to stop the oxidation precisely where they want it, the leaves go through firing. This is basically drying them with hot air. It halts the enzymatic process, reduces the moisture right down, and really locks in that final flavor profile and aroma.
Wow. Quite a journey for those leaves.
Yeah.
So after all that, from the unique low country environment to this careful, slightly different processing, what really defines a cup of Ruhuna tea for you? If someone's trying it for the first time, what should they expect?
Okay. First off, you should expect a genuinely full-flavored black tea. It really has a rich, full-bodied character. And that, as we talked about, comes directly from that fertile soil, the fast growth, and the warm climate. It often feels more substantial on the palate than some of the high-grown teas, a satisfying kind of weight to it.
And what about the look of it in the cup? Is it distinctive?
Oh, absolutely. That slightly shorter oxidation we discussed, it really pays off in the appearance. You get this beautiful, clear infusion. The color is typically a bright reddish brown. It's quite vibrant, really visually appealing.
Sounds lovely.
It really is. And it makes you think, doesn't it, how much the processing impacts not just taste, but how the tea actually looks. And even though it's robust, Ruhuna isn't just a one-note tea. Not at all. Depending on exactly where it's grown within Ruhuna and the specifics of the processing, you might find some interesting nuances.
Like what kind of notes?
Well, some might show hints of spice, maybe a little warmth like cinnamon. Others can have a kind of malty depth, almost like, fresh bread. And sometimes you might even get a little touch of citrus, like a brightness cutting through the richness.
Interesting.
And the smell, the aroma, it's usually described as really fresh, quite inviting. You might get hints of cut grass, maybe wildflowers. These lighter notes kind of balance the full body really nicely. It makes for a pretty captivating cup all around.
It definitely sounds like it. It's clear, though, this isn't just about the taste and smell, is it? Ruhuna tea seems to carry a lot of history and have a wider impact. What's the story behind tea in this region?
That's right. There's a rich context here. While tea first came to Sri Lanka, well, Ceylon as it was then, back in the 18th century,
Right.
commercial tea planting in the Ruhuna region started a bit later. The first estates were really established around the year 1900, mostly in the foothills bordering the Central Mountains. But what's really fascinating, if you connect it to the deeper history, is that the name Ruhuna itself refers to an ancient principality. This area was actually the heart of a really flourishing ancient civilization in Sri Lanka, a major cultural and economic center, long, long before tea was ever grown there.
Wow, so the name itself carries that ancient weight. Incredible. And what about its importance today in modern Sri Lanka?
Oh, it's still hugely important.
Yeah.
Ruhuna tea is a really vital part of Sri Lanka's culture and, of course, its economy. The tea estates themselves, they create these incredibly picturesque landscapes, rolling green hills, the little tea factories dotted around. It's part of the region's identity.
I can picture it. And crucially, these estates provide a lot of jobs. They're significant employers for the local communities. So the tea industry really contributes massively to the social and economic well-being of the region. It's easy to forget the human side when you're just enjoying a cup, but it's so important there.
That's a really vital point to remember. And
Mm-hmm.
looking ahead, what about the future? Particularly things like sustainability. How is Ruhuna balancing its traditions with, well, modern environmental concerns?
Yeah, that's a big focus now, and rightly so. Tea producers across Sri Lanka, very much including those in Ruhuna, are putting more and more emphasis on sustainable practices.
What sort of things are they doing?
Well, it covers quite a range. Things like improving water conservation, which is obviously critical. There's a growing move towards organic farming methods and also biodynamic approaches, which is a sort of holistic, ethological way of farming, thinking about the whole farm as a living system,
Right.
and definitely reducing reliance on chemical fertilizers and pesticides. It's about protecting the environment, the soil health, and also the health of the workers and consumers. What's quite insightful, I think, is seeing how Ruhuna is trying to blend its long history with these modern needs. It's kind of becoming a testing ground for how traditional agriculture can adapt to be more ecologically sound. It's trying to find that balance between preserving the heritage and ensuring a healthy future, both for the tea industry and for the unique ecosystem down there.
That's really encouraging to hear. So, okay, we've covered the land, the leaf, the process, the taste, the history, the future. Let's bring it back to the cup. When is the best time to actually enjoy this unique tea? It sounds like it could fit into quite a few different moments.
Oh, absolutely. It's remarkably versatile. For starters, its invigorating character, plus a decent but not overwhelming amount of caffeine, makes it a fantastic morning tea, a really good, robust brew to help kickstart your day.
Yeah, I could see that. A good strong start. What about later? Afternoon tea, maybe. Isn't that usually for lighter teas?
Traditionally, yes, often lighter teas. But Ruhuna can actually be a really interesting choice for afternoon tea, maybe with a bit of a twist. Because it has that full body, it stands up really well to richer foods.
Ah, okay.
Think scones with clotted cream and jam, or maybe some savory things like mini quiches or pastries. Ruhuna won't get lost next to them. Its character complements those bolder flavors nicely.
Good point.
And in warmer weather, it makes brilliant iced tea. Because it's full-bodied, the flavor doesn't get too diluted when it's chilled over ice. Just brew it a bit stronger than usual, let it cool right down, pour over ice. Maybe add a slice of lemon or sprig of mint. Really refreshing.
Ooh, iced Ruhuna. I hadn't thought of that. Sounds
yeah.
good. Any other times it works well?
Yes, actually, after dinner can be a great time too. It has a natural astringency. You know, that slightly clean, dry feeling it leaves in your mouth?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, that astringency can be quite good for digestion. It acts as a nice palate cleanser after a heavier meal. Just a simple cup can feel really refreshing. Or you could add a splash of milk, maybe a little honey, and it becomes quite soothing, a nice way to wind down the evening.
So really quite adaptable then. Morning, noon, night, hot or cold?
Pretty much. It fits into a lot of different scenarios.
Fantastic. Well, there we have it, a proper deep dive into Ruhuna tea. We've traveled through its unique, low-grown home. We've followed the careful journey from leaf to cup, explored that distinctive full-bodied flavor, and touched on its deep history and its modern push towards sustainability.
It really is fascinating, isn't it? So much more than just dried leaves and hot water. It's a whole story, a whole environment captured in a cup.
Absolutely. So maybe here's something to think about for your next cup of tea. When you consider Ruhuna's past, you know, as this ancient kingdom, this cultural hub, and then you look at its present, this commitment to working with nature sustainably, maybe Ruhuna tea isn't just a drink. Maybe it's a kind of living link, a connection between a really rich history and hopefully a more sustainable future. It makes you wonder, doesn't it? How much history, how much environmental consciousness can actually be held within something as simple as your daily cup? Something to ponder, perhaps.